Welcome to another episode of the Nui Tech People podcast. On today's episode, we have Roger Crellin, recently moved to Newcastle. Welcome, Roger.
Hey, James. Thank you.
Mate, for those of our audience who don't know you, which would be the absolute vast majority, given you're brand new to Newcastle, mate, well, give us a bit of an overview of who you are and your career to date.
Yeah, so new back to Newcastle. Originally moved here about 10 years ago, but I've never actually lived in Newcastle.
Yep.
So my career has mainly been overseas in technology-related companies, but on the commercial side, but know my way around a bit of tech, and now decided to stay in Newcastle.
Yeah, right. Mate, let's go back to the beginning of your career. Mate, talk to me about, you know, what your career path has looked like today. Where did you start? Local roles? I know you've done quite a bit of international work, but let's start, where did you begin?
So I was fortunate enough to, when I was sitting in an office of chartered accountants, which is another story that you don't want to hear about, I was fortunate enough to be asked to join a company by the name of Fujifilm. And I was essentially, from the commercial side and the product side, digital employee number one in Australia. So kicked off what they know as digital services back in the day when we used to shoot film, and film's a beautiful thing. But of course, along came digital photography, and that was a very, very fortunate start.
Yeah, nice. What does the commercial role look like, or a digital role within Fuji look like back then?
So that was about launching the first transmission of photos across the internet between retailers and consumers, and also the emergence of what we do every day now, and that's cell phones in cell phone cameras. So it's very, very exciting times.
Yeah, beautiful. And then you've moved international after that?
Yeah, well, after that went to Germany.
Yeah. What's that German experience look like?
German experience looks like taking your family to Germany as teenagers is like moving the Seventh Fleet.
Yeah.
But in Germany, you know, home of industrial era in Europe. So, you know, to be there at the forefront of digital television in Cologne in Germany was absolutely fascinating. You know, as you see such a powerful economy, and as it transitions or the nation transforms itself into the digital age, very, very exciting times, and, you know, a country that very welcoming to change.
Yeah, and what did your role look like, and what company were we with over in Germany?
We were an organization that manufactured smart televisions for Philips, Samsung and LG.
Yeah, right.
And fed content into those in public areas, so train stations, hotels, public areas. So
a little bit in that advertising space as well.
Yeah, those live advertising.
And what was your role?
My role was COO
of
Europe, and to pull that together and then move the business. And we moved the business. We merged three companies into one, and then set up a new distribution system that saw us distribute product to about 21 countries.
Wow. Yeah. So your roles have traditionally been quite in that commercial space, right, but working in and around technology and technology companies, is that correct?
Yeah, so this is the good part is getting, you know, especially close to your colleagues that might be listening to this now, is getting close enough to the technologists to understand what they need and what they're good at without actually getting in their way. Yeah, and that's quite a trick.
Yeah.
Because, you know, no technologist or architect likes you to get in their way.
Yep.
And then it's about, okay, so they can create this. The market says they want this. So I sit in the middle. The market says they want this. Technologists and the architects say we can build this somewhere in the middle. Hopefully there's a happy relationship.
Yeah.
And then you get to put that product to market.
Yeah, nice. Man, I'm going to dig into that for a tiny bit. But so if you're working, so it might be, you know, CCO type role or anything in around that commercial side of technology. Mate, any advice to other people who are coming through that rank, who are looking to play in that space in working with, you know, software engineers, working with architects? Any advice for people that sort of starting their career out in and around that space?
Patience when working with engineering architects, but I say that with great love.
Yeah.
But more importantly, seriously, it's about backing yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to take your own risk. If you're sitting in a role and you believe that there is a better product out there that you believe in more, that you want to be involved in, not need to be involved in, you know, and there's a big difference between the want and the need, you know. You know, need is more about the material things, but, you know, want is where you actually will evolve and escalate your career a lot better. So, you know, if there's a product in hypothetically Chicago that you love, you want to work with, then go for that. Don't wait. Don't wait for someone to hand it to you.
All right, if we dig into that a little bit more, what does that look like? Are you in your role? Obviously, it helps when you've got some runs on the board. But again, if advice for others, if you're looking to move and you see an opportunity, is it directly reaching out to somebody? Is it waiting for that job ad? Is it moving to the area and organizing a face-to-face meeting, a coffee? How do you embrace that situation?
She's delving into your expertise now, mate. But, you know, there's obviously people like yourself who know everybody. You know, because when we're with a corporation, we do sometimes get a little bit polarized. And I think it's very easy for all of us, no matter which area of that corporation you're in, to not constantly be out there networking and talking to people such as yourself and your team and reaching out to people and being quite well known. You know, as humans, we say, you know, we can be extroverted or we can be introverted. That's too simple. You know, there's a balance there in actually being out there and being known and being, you know, I always say quietly confident.
Yeah.
And therefore being known within your network around the technology space. And just don't keep that to Australia. Newcastle's a fantastic place. Go ahead in technology. However, you know, that does not stop you in this age talking to somebody on different professional platforms across in the States or in Japan or wherever it is about future opportunities.
Yeah, I really like that point. I think Newcastle, there's a lot of absolute benefits to Newcastle and within the technology community. One of the big benefits is a couple of degrees of separation, one and a half degrees of separation, really. There's not too many people you won't be able to get to know in the technology community without, you know, one or two conversations. But it can also be a little bit insular, where people in the local community know each other and like to stay local because they like to live local and they like Newcastle as a place. But I think there is a lot, what you just mentioned there, are a lot to be gained by either networking in Sydney, networking with, you know, some companies that might be on an international scale, based in Sydney's the closest, but then, as you said, also looking internationally.
Yeah, I mean, today we're not restricted in the way that we can communicate, and it's so easy to find like-minded people in credible social media platforms and credible business platforms, and then filter those out to the people that you can actually form a business relationship or a career-based relationship on. I think Newcastle likes to say it's parochial, but I think each city has its own degree of that.
Yep.
I think that's just natural. But it's how you then integrate into that city naturally. So I've been back in Newcastle about 3 months, lucky enough to meet you and quite a few other people actually. And everyone is incredibly open and wanting the city, the state and the nation to succeed.
Yeah, I think there is a big part of that for Newcastle in particular, wanting to see each other succeed. I think most people will genuinely try their best to help each other out, and especially new people to the area, and help them ingrain within the community. Mate, going back to the German experience, what did that look like when you were looking at an international role like that? You had a family, you moved a family over there. Yeah. What were your big considerations at the time? What was your big primary driver behind it? I'd love to understand what that thought process looks like, because I think there'd be a lot of people, especially in the technology game, technology skills tend to be quite global.
Yes.
You can take those skills internationally and have, you know, relatively low, you know, learning curves. Those skills are quite transferable. So what did that decision look like for you?
A lot of it was about family. And at first it was probably family was about 50-50.
Yeah.
So half the family cheering, half the family, you know, chaining themselves in their bedroom.
Yeah.
Almost pretty much a true story. A lot of that moving, if you have family, if you're on your own, but more so if you're on your own, then you've got to consider, you know, how do I get into the local community? And, I'm a big believer in integrating into the local community. Met a lot of lovely people and a lot of great people from other countries, but what we found was that we were quite unique. So we lived in the center of a small village just outside Bonn in Germany.
Yep.
And we were the only non-German family in that street, whereas a lot of the other non-German families would live in the same community.
Like an expat community?
Yeah, an expat community, yeah. So, you know, that is something that if you're going, doesn't matter whether it's alone, with a partner, with a family, or any combination of that, get yourself into the community, because then especially you'll naturally find other like-minded people in your sector of the technology space, and that will then give you the broader horizon, you know, your specialization in technology. But what is that person that's come there from the States or is a local German, say if we're using Germany as an example, what's their take on your technology? And that way you don't stay with that polarized work view or that polarized just Australian expat or US expat view.
Yeah. Any advice for people that are, obviously you mentioned not just, you know, isolating yourself in an expat community. How do you actually ingrain yourself into the community? What did that look like?
Not too dissimilar to to what you do here, where you will go through the layers. So you'll have a work colleague, but that work colleague also has friends outside of work. So you've got to kind of piggyback the friendship thing.
Yep.
And that could be a business friend or a social friend. And be open enough that when you're sitting on a train or in a cafe, you actually talk to the person next to you. And I know that that's going to, you know, that always makes me laugh. And maybe some other people go, of course I talk to the person next to me. Well, guess what? Most of us don't.
Ah, definitely not. Not yeah. With phones and headphones these days.
Correct. Yep. Yep. So you've actually got to put yourself out there in a non-threatening way.
I mean. Yeah, that, I think it's a really interesting point, because I think anyone that's moving to a new area, that the challenge of getting to build a network can be easier in some places than others. But obviously going to a different country when there's language barriers as well would make it even more challenging, right?
Yes, my German never really was that great. But, you know, it's amazing how we as humans help one another in that situation. But it's no different. So you started a new job. So you started a new job in Newcastle, might be a renewables company. You're in the tech side. You're in a team that's working on a new development in the tech lab. You actually have to put yourself out there to talk to your new colleagues. And likewise, they'll do the same. So what stops us from doing that in a more public arena in another country? Should be nothing.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. So if you have a look at your experience, all in all, moving to Germany, it'd be something you'd recommend, not just Germany in particular, but just technology folk coming through from a growth perspective, you'd encourage an international move?
Yeah, absolutely. To widen, just allow you to widen that thinking. And even if you're staying in the same product stream, you'll get a different view of that product stream, but more than likely, you'll then move into other product streams, especially if you're in other hot spots of software, whether it be in the States or in parts of Asia,
yeah,
where you're exposed to products that may not be readily used in the Australian environment. So that, you know, as a technologist, that would, I think, very exciting.
Yeah, nice. Mate, after the Germany experience, what would life look like for you from a career perspective?
I went to work for a company in Denver, Colorado, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, building Wi-Fi networks. So.
Yeah, talk to us about that. Like, obviously going from Australia to Germany, Germany to Colorado, very different locations, very
Germany
different type
to
of people.
US was a massive cultural shift, yeah.
Yeah. Mate, advice for people to, you know, in and around moving to the US?
Moving to the US, it's a fascinating country. You can't help but be excited by the US. But I think you probably want to select where you live. I was fortunate. Denver's a great city.
Yeah.
Especially if you're into skiing, snowboarding or rock climbing.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, not for everybody. And there are some parts of the US that may or may not suit your personal environment.
Yep. I completely agree. Yeah. And I think it's a learning experience, right?
Yeah. But if you don't try.
Yeah. Mate, what's the biggest takeaway that you took from your US experience?
I think generally in the US, no matter what city you are in, and you know, you're going to be in a city that suits your technology and your personal likes, is just the sheer market, you know, the size. You hit on something there and you've just got this critical mass. I mean, what is it? 360 million people, I think, pretty much on any one day of the week.
Yeah.
Like if you are working on something that's new in the tech space, or you have something that you believe can make it work, wow, look at just the local market alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the win for the US.
Yeah, nice. And then, mate, after the US experience, where's your career taking you?
I did actually do a circle back to the US, but in between stopped via Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah, right.
Which was pretty cool. Did a one-year contract role for a company that does software for casinos.
Yeah, right, in Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah, in Kuala Lumpur and in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. Yeah,
nice, mate. It sounds quite interesting.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I've never spent a dime in any casino, but spent a lot of time hanging out in them on free coffee.
Yeah, right.
But fascinating industry, absolutely fascinating. The investment is just wow. And technology, you know, they are not shy to invest.
Yep. So. Mate, it sounds like the whole international theme, you know, has been throughout your career, and you've not been afraid to move around. What's the biggest challenge that you found with that?
With moving?
With moving and going to new locations. Obviously, there are a lot of benefits. Picking
paperwork.
Up paperwork.
Paperwork, yeah.
Not the family challenge of moving family around?
No. You know, we're humans. We adjust really quite well. Paperwork. So be prepared for the immigration paperwork and the health paperwork.
Yeah, right.
Sounds boring, but you got to get it done, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Mate, we're obviously back in Newcastle now. You've got a wealth of experience playing in and around technology, in particular in and around the commercial aspect of it. Senior level technology roles are fewer and farther between.
Correct.
Not only in Newcastle, but in Australia in general. But you and I have been having a conversation in around this fractional work, and there's some fractional work that is starting to come through. We're seeing a little bit with smaller companies, with CTOs. Really interested in sort of find out what your experience has been like and why you believe in that fractional approach going forward.
The thing I like about fractional and, you know, fractional is of course a modern term for contract work, but it's the difference in it. So the true fractional becomes, you know, that might be one day a week or 2 days a week, as distinct from a contractor who might go in for 3 months and perhaps unravel what's wrong and then walk away. The problem may or may not be solved depending upon the organization's investment in the contractor. Consulting, of course, by the hour and very, to me, an old school. And it works for the big firms, yep. But if you're an individual specialist, especially in technology, and you've got those skills, for an organization who's either a startup, scale up, or may have done well but kind of plateaued a bit and looking for what next, for them to be able to tap into a resource, and that can be a technologist, an engineer, an architect, or a commercial person such as myself, for between, say, 1 to 3 days a week, that therefore makes that business more sustainable, because they're not got this burden of a five-day work full-time employee. And I think the fractional, therefore, gives a little bit of security for the individual, because they have their fixed days a week. They can actually achieve something for the long haul. So you're not just there to tell them what's wrong with their product. You're there to actually unbundle that product or that business and actually see it through the success path. And for both parties, it's sustainable. And I think it works so much better in the current mode of, you know, do I want to jump the bus to Sydney City every day? Do I want to drive here every day? You know, do I want to be enslaved to one job? I think it fits really, really nicely for all of us now.
Yeah, and I think in particular it works at that senior end of town where a small company might not have the resources to be able to hire a full-time person like yourself with a wealth of experience. And actually not only couldn't afford you, but doesn't need you on a full-time basis, doesn't need you on a five-day-a-week basis, but can sort of leverage your skills in and around that one or a couple of days a week, right?
Yep.
And from working with technology companies, from a commercial aspect, where's the biggest gaps that you've seen? So when you go into organizations from a fractional sort of CCO type role, is there a common common problem or a common challenge that a lot of growing companies face?
I think there's a couple of things that we can always do better. And, you know, obviously it depends upon the organization. And we know which organizations get it right because we read about them every day. But, you know, it's still one of the hardest things I think we touched on before around this pivotal role between, you know, the marketplace or the user and the engineering and the sales team. And I think at times, especially in that traditional full-time employment mode, those persons or business units get too competitive. And therefore, it's being able to have a leadership team or a member of each of those former leadership team and be able to not have those sort of those biases and that competition that often gets bred in a traditional organizational structure.
And how do you go in there and solve that challenge?
Just be a normal human and put the time in to actually understand each business unit's people and what actually makes them tick. And when I say business unit, that's also obviously understanding the marketplace or your customers as well. You've got to put that time in and really genuinely understand those people that you've got to work with, because you're not going to be successful if one business unit can be great, but it'll fail.
Yeah.
And unless you put that genuine time in, and I'm not talking about time as in masses of time, I'm talking about, you know, the authenticity of the time that you spend with those people, whether that be an end user, a client, a reseller, whether that be an engineer, an architect, someone in the PR department, whoever that might be. And that's what it is. It's a very, only naturally do you get that.
Yeah, you mentioned the end customer being a key component in that. Yeah. And I think that gets overlooked sometimes in around that technology space. Like there's more than a thousand well-built apps sitting in the app store that didn't understand their end user, didn't understand the customer. Well-written code, well-built app, didn't understand the end user. So is it a reverse engineering job sometimes, understanding that end user, the customer, what they're after, and then reverse engineering that back to the engineering team and sales function in help building that out? Is that where that sort of commercial role plays?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's correct. And it is difficult because if you know, a lot of apps start with the right intention of being exactly or personalized towards that customer set that they're looking for. But of course, as you scale and as you get zeros in the number of users, it gets harder and harder to get more customized or more personal. But if you start with the right intent and you keep hold of that sample of idealistic customers, whether that be real interactions or ones that you've profiled, if you can hang on to that and keep feeding it back through the flywheel of your business, rather than actually then getting a little bit of ahead of ourselves and just saying, no, this is what they want.
Mate, staying on that sort of the commercial aspect of it, is there a free piece of advice you'd be able to give? And it'd have to be generalized, obviously, because each situation would be quite unique. But is there some common advice you'd be able to give let's call a startup, maybe moving in that scale-up stage, a company looking to grow, a technology company looking to grow from a commercial aspect? Is there any sort of generalist advice that you'd be like, oh, I've seen this X amount of times and, you know, you should be considering this as a company's really looking to grow?
Probably one of the hardest things I've seen is where, and I think it's the same for any business, is where the leader isolates themselves from the rest of the team. So, you know, it is very much, you've got to, if you're running that organization, whether you're the founder or the head of that organization or a senior member of that organization, is always putting everybody ahead of yourself in the thinking process.
Yeah, Simon Sinek's got it, that a book, Leaders Eat Last, I believe it's called. Yeah. You know, I think it's that mentality, right? Yeah, it's that, or the servant leader type mentality. If there's somebody out there looking to one day be in a CCO role, right? What's the best career path? Is there a best career path to get into that?
Best career path. I think in any management role, you've got to know your way around the numbers.
Yeah.
Okay, so the numbers are paramount, because at the end of the day, we're in business to look after one another as human beings, and to serve our colleagues and to serve our business community. However, let's be realistic. You know, neither of us are in business to lose money.
Correct.
So you've got to know your way around the numbers. I'm the son of a chartered accountant, so that kind of helps, you know, brought up at the dining table looking at spreadsheets.
Yep. Sounds thrilling.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Yeah, rainy Saturday afternoon with Dad. Sorry, Dad. It was fun. But know your numbers, but also be very open. So clearly your audience have now worked out I'm not a technologist, but hopefully they're still with us. But I respect the technology, and I take the time to understand enough to be able to put that product to market,
yep,
and to be able to complement the engineer and feed into engineering what they want from the customer. So it's, again, it's you putting in that genuine time to understand each of your colleagues' functions enough to respect them, never to tell them what to do.
Yeah, I think that's a big part in around where I've seen some people fail in around the business development, sales, commercial aspect of software, is making false promises without consulting with that engineering team.
Oh, yeah, I love that one, yeah.
You know, some things may look easy or be an easy fix, and some things aren't. Being able to have that really tight connection between sales and engineering is a really, you know, that's where I've seen a lot of success really genuinely happen.
Yeah, I think probably some of my best refereeing is not on the rugby pitch. It's refereeing between a project manager, a sales manager, and an engineering manager.
Yeah, streamlining that process tends to be, you know, where the real success happens, right?
Poor old project manager's the one in the middle that comes in broken and battered into the office and goes, "Do you believe what that person offered?"
Yeah, mate, completely agree. If we go from a leadership perspective, you've obviously moved into, you know, that C-level and played in multiple C-level roles within organizations. We'll start, there's two parts I want to dig into, A being the skills and B being the training. But from a skills perspective to start with, is there any particular skills besides the commercial nouns that you think has really helped you as you've sort of grown into that leadership capacity?
From a skill set, we touched on numbers before. It's then the having, not necessarily being a certified project manager, but the discipline of running a project, whether that's a large tender process or whether it's a business improvement process. It's having that discipline, that project management style discipline.
Yeah, nice. Mate, from a training perspective, is there any training that you've taken over the years that you'd highly recommend to other people as you've moved into those, you know, C-level roles?
Training comes and goes, and I always think training you need to reinforce. Mm-hmm. So you can never do a course once. It may not necessarily be the same course, but yeah, it might be a slightly different take on that course. You know, clearly, firstly, there's a technical training, you know. You've got to have your software training on the particular applications that you're working with. So that goes without saying. So tick the box there. In terms of other wider training, I always think, you know, the whole communication skills around persuasion and negotiation and those areas are foundational things that someone should always do.
How do you get better at, well, persuasion, that's sales essentially, right? Well, there's an element of sales or persuasion will feed into sales, maybe not vice versa. How do you get better at that?
It's about understanding who you're talking with. So, you know, I was fortunate in my earlier career to have a boss who was a great lobbyist, you know, and so we talk about persuasion, and being a lobbyist takes it to the next level. So he was quite skilled at lobbying politicians for various needs and wants of business. And He actually lives in Newcastle, by the way. And to be able to actually take persuasion to a level of lobbying where you're actually doing it on a relationship basis and you're not just, you know, push, push, push. Mm-hmm. And it's that two-way, it becomes a two-way relationship in that process.
Is there any key training or skills, or is it just time in the seat to get better at those types of roles, or is it being around somebody who's got those skills and just learning vicariously through them?
I think firstly, you've got to have the foundation. So you need to do the foundational courses and training expeditions in what interests you. It's no good signing up for every course in the organization because it's available. So, you know, what do you really want to do?
Mm-hmm.
And then, seek someone out, either in the company or outside or both, that will actually always keep you in check, that you can pick up the phone. So, you know, I have people that I can just text someone who I regard as a friend or a mentor or a peer or a coach. I can actually text them and get an answer back because we have that relationship, that close relationship. And again, it's around investing that time. And there'll be things that surprisingly you can even help your mentor out with at times as well.
Hey, on mentorship, how would you advise people find a good mentor?
Again, through your network. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a mentor in the same industry. So you've got to say, okay, what do I want? Do I want a mentor for me to get better at using that application? Then clearly that goes without saying, you know, it's got to be someone within that same technology set. Do I want a mentor to help me change career paths? You know, so therefore that can be someone in the organization, but less likely. But that could be someone such as yourself, you know, who, you know, I know that you invest time in the local community and people as well. And the same as what I've started to do and will do as well. But they're not always from the same industry.
Yeah, I like that. It's looking outside the square because I think that, and it doesn't matter whether it be mentorship or sales or problem solving in general, it's taking some learnings from what might have been done in a different industry, a different vertical, and taking those learnings or information and how you can apply that to your situation. I really like that idea.
Yeah, I mean, Newcastle's got some really good groups going around. You know, like you run events, you know a lot of people. There's also the other innovation organizations and forums. There is actually a lot going on in this city.
I completely agree.
And what's really cool is that they've, unlike some major cities around the world, it doesn't cost you money to actually go to a lot of these events.
No.
But again, right back to where we started a little while ago, you got to put yourself out there. You got to put in the time. You got to walk into the room with a level of self-efficacy, you know, that quiet confidence to be able to walk up, check out who's there and target someone.
Yeah, mate, it's been a bit of a common theme in your conversation today. It's been about taking a little bit of responsibility on the self to start with. So you made mention of it on training. You made mention of it looking for training in something you really have a passion or enjoyment around. So like find that area that you're actually excited about learning and then go deep into that. You made mention of it when you're talking about moving overseas and actually reaching out to people internationally on, okay, here's the role that I might want, the company that I might want to work for, and then actually making that move internationally for you. Might not be international for everyone, but it's actually taking those steps and putting yourself out there to let the opportunities come, you know, as opposed to just sitting back and waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, and it's hard. You know, it's kind of like standing in the middle of the room going, well, who can I talk to next?
Yeah. No, I really like that. I think it's a great career advice piece for technologists in general is understanding that, hey, if you've got a passion about what you're doing, you're probably going to do a better job of it. Continuing to do the training in that area, looking for mentors, people that might have been there, done that before you, and being able to build a network of those people. And then like really having a crack at the opportunity that might be exciting to you.
Yeah. I mean, any technologist, engineer, architect that I've met, they are always very, very focused and passionate about the area that of their knowledge. And you said earlier, it's so transportable.
Yeah.
It's so transportable. You know, We, as a nation, especially in Australia, I can assure you, are hung up on, if you know this application, you can only use this application in transport or in mining. No, actually, the application is the application. And it's about then harnessing that and learning a little bit about the organization to then make it dance for that organization. And so, never feel that you are polarized into an application in a particular industry and therefore, wow, I'm stuck. Yeah. Never feel that way.
No, I completely agree. Transferable skills are, fantastic. And you mentioned that before about the commercial. Now it's understanding numbers, super transferable skill, the ability to influence, transferable skill. Then that sales persuasion part, obviously for super transferable across industries, across roles.
Done.
Mate, done.
Where do we find this person?
I think it's just there is no, everyone looks for a unicorn, but everyone brings something different to the table and have different strengths. But being able to round out some skills sometimes really helps, and especially from a technology perspective. More and more technology basics, and especially in the engineering capacity, will be taken over by AI.
Yeah.
So being able to influence, being able to sell, being able to understand customers, being able to have some commercial nouns are all skills that will really be more beneficial, I think, in the future for technologists, as opposed to just, bread and butter, being able to write some code.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about how do I actually, with my skills, how do I make my knowledge of that application or that area of technology, how do I make it dance?
Yeah.
How do I make it dance? Because that's what the founder or the shareholder sitting in front of you in that final interview wants to know, how can you make my company dance?
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. Mate, we'll get to the end of this. We'll wrap this up in a minute, but you're obviously playing at the moment at a fractional role.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing some fractional roles more come up in that C-level because companies kind of afford, really. That's the one that comes down to.
Yeah.
Mate, from an engineering perspective or from technology perspective, do you see opportunities for fractional roles in the more technical roles?
Absolutely. There was a company I was involved in a few years back, which was a specialist sports database company for elite athletes. And it was founded by a fantastic guy from Northern Beaches in Sydney. And, that we ended up taking that to the US and getting a great client base. But if I remember the early days of that company, it's a very successful company, founder's great guy. Budget's tight, man. Budget's tight. But, there was only myself and one other who were non-technical guys, yeah?
Yeah.
And it needed the engine room. And so we had contractors, but, going back a few years, we would have actually used more people on a fractional basis, rather than contract firms or contractors that would come in for a month and maybe not finish within that month. So, it was quite difficult time to build to scale up to go to the US. And then on the engineer side, I think, if you love the application suite that you specialize in, how much better could it be than say, okay, I'm going to do 2 days a week in sports database. I'm going to do a day a week in the transport sector. I'm going to do 2 days a week in the health sector. And to be able to do that, and some people go, that'll never work. You can't flip from transport to health. Well, I say rubbish.
Yeah.
You can actually. You've just got to, again, put in that, seek out to understand how to use that application. And I think for an engineer, that'd be really, really cool to be able to invest like that, be their own master, but not tied down and branded as a contractor or a consultant.
Right? Yeah, and I think contractor, consultant, fractional role, I think there's some overlap in different parts, but I really like the idea of, especially when you come to for niche skills, that fractional role is being able to bring in an expert in a real niche, bring that person in, whether it be the architecture part or it might be some form of engineering that come in, really narrow the spot. And again, like we talked about before, you can take a lot of learnings from one industry to another.
Yeah, and you get the longevity of it. So if you're putting on someone fractional 1 or 2 days a week and the work is exciting and the company is exciting and the individuals are excited, then that could go on for years. So you get that huge benefit of that intimate knowledge of the company. as a thing from a contractor, we say, okay, we've got this deadline to get out for client X. Let's get someone in for 6 weeks. And then they go again. So all that intellectual capital around the business is lost.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Man, I like that. It's a nice way to finish up our conversation today as well, because I think it's a nice piece. I think as technology professionals continue to grow their careers and are looking for that next opportunity, it might not next be that you need to jump into a full-time role. It could be fractional opportunities to start with to get your toe in the water.
Yep, and keep you excited and on your edge.
Appreciate it, mate. Thanks for taking the time to come in.
Fantastic. Cheers.